Thank you, Jordan, and good morning, everybody. These are the diehard early morning people who are here. I'm sure more will come as the hour goes on. I'm from the University of Arizona. I appreciate the invitation to participate today. In addition to my position in the Department of Agriculture and Resource Economics, I'm also hold a faculty appointment in our Department of Soil, Water, and Environmental Science, which has become a very eclectic or ecumenical type department in that it welcomes people like me, an economist by training, and someone who really works in the policy world and policy dimension. So this isn't my usual venue for conferences, so I appreciate the invitation and very glad to be here today. Steve asked me to talk some based on a paper I co-authored with some others, Forecast, that was released just about a year ago, last November 9th or 8th, if I remember correctly, called Water People in the Future, Water Availability for Agriculture in the United States. And some of you may be familiar with CAST. They put out policy papers and issue papers. And what they asked the authors to do was help write a case study, and the cases I'll talk about in a few minutes, that looks at the water situation generally in the area and the implications of the water situation there for agriculture. And we had four case studies and a fifth author. And I ended up becoming the chair, not realizing that that meant I had to do a lot more editing and things like that, and then became the official spokesperson for the paper. But it's a very nice piece because there are some very interesting themes that come out of it that I will talk about here this morning. And just a word about my center. Whenever I make a presentation, I like to talk a little bit about where I spend my long days. We're part of a national network of water centers throughout the country. There's one of us in each state. We get a little bit of federal funding through the U.S. Geological Service survey. And our particular center, everyone is different, focuses on water management and policy. We do some GIS and hydrologic work of a limited basis. But most of our work really focuses on the real world and water availability and water policies. And I used to serve in my state on the State Transportation Board, and what I used to like to say to some of the engineers who really didn't care about the financial aspects of things, well, if there's no money, there's no work for you. There are no roads to design, roads to build, and the like. And of course, with here, I realize many of you work on some of the technological aspects, agronomy and so forth, and obviously there needs to be water for there to be agricultural and the issues you're dealing with. And more we're running against some limits and some significant competition. I put my website on the bottom there. I think I also have at the end of the slide, the paper I just mentioned is available for free download either from the CAST website or the My Water Center's website. So I teach a course in Arizona water policy, and I talk a lot about policy, and I always like to give a little context, and I'm not going to treat you like my students and give you a lot of slides on context, but just to point out that water management policy, what you see out there on the ground, depends a lot on, of course, resource availability and physical characteristics, also location of demand and supplies. Demand isn't always where the supplies are. The economics plays into it. A key factor determining what you see out there in terms of water availability to various sectors and who has the rights and so forth depends on the historic and current legal and institutional framework. You know, many laws in many states don't really recognize the hydrologic cycle and that surface water and groundwater are connected. And it may not seem logical, but that's the way the law has grown over time, and that has to be respected. Another thing that's important to keep in mind when you look at the water practices or policies across the country is that in the United States, we have a very decentralized approach to water management. I'll talk for a few minutes about the federal nexus, but in most cases, except for water quality issues, water management is really determined at a state or sometimes even sub-state level. Of course, politics play into this. Happy election day to everybody. and public values, and of course, the information available. So the four case studies that we addressed were California. Thomas Harder was the author on that. Arizona, Florida, and the High Plains Aquifer Region. And I note that both California and Arizona are part of the Colorado River watershed. I realize you come from all over the country here and perhaps other countries. You all know where Florida is. The High Plains is an interesting one because we're talking about multiple states in that case. Now, I mentioned the federal nexus, and throughout the case studies, what is some of the federal nexus? We have federally funded construction projects. We have Endangered Species Act issues to address. We have the Clean Water Act and the Safe Drinking Water Act. Of course, with that, we have new constituents that are not necessarily controlled or measured at this point. But we have changing standards, as you know, arsenic, and there's always talk of additional standards. Perchlorate is one. And then shared borders, of course, is where the federal government has some impact and influence, sometimes very significant, on water management and policy. And I'm going to give you kind of the punchline early on in the talk and then come back after I say a little bit about the different case studies with some closing comments. But when we looked across the different cases, what we saw was that there are differences and similarities. What are some of the differences? Wide diversity in the availability, distribution, consumption, regulation of surface water, groundwater, and treated water. Again, reflective of the decentralized approach. Similarity, each state or region is increasingly concerned about the ability to meet future water demand. And though, as we look, the proportion of water used in agriculture may vary some, the proportion of total water use is by agriculture is high in every one of the regions. We also see changing agricultural water use. Increasingly, regulatory considerations come into play. As I think we all know, agricultural lands are being urbanized. Voluntary transactions being entered into, that's a big, big issue here in the West, where cities, particularly right here in Southern California, are entering into arrangements with large agricultural districts to fallow land, lease their water. We have a lot of competition for water supplies between and among water-using sectors. Even within water-using sectors, there's significant competition for water. We see that in Arizona. We're trying to deal with it, but potential competition among the municipal sector. And then, of course, conservation is an issue that's getting more and more attention. And many water users, including agricultural water users, will say they're efficient, they're doing the things to be efficient, but are they as efficient as they can be? And what are the implications of being as efficient as they can be? There, again, the hydrologic cycle comes into play. So I'm going to talk very quickly through some of these. 20, 25 minutes goes very quickly when you're up here at the podium. In the report, if you're interested in looking at it, we have a snapshot of each of the states, and I have some arrows in there about the couple of things I want to talk about. California is a growing state, and clearly additional demand for water is going to be met largely by the things listed there: conservation, reuse, retirement of agricultural water uses, land conversion. And in California in particular, and most of you know about, you know, the history of the Owens Valley and the state water project, and the water tends to be in the north part of the state, large population centers in the south part of the state. So there's a spatial disconnect in terms of water supply, and you'll see that coming through in some of the other cases. And sometimes there's also a temporal disconnect, insufficient storage, for long-term droughts. And there are some statistics you may be aware of. 15% of the nation's milk and cheese come from this part of the country. I don't know how many of you live in the West, but you know, we get commercials in Arizona about the dairy and cheese from California more often than we do from Wisconsin. So a lot of dairy here. Now, from a policy perspective, what's going on in California? lots of things, and I can't cover them all. And California's had some real issues because of the Delta smelt and its status up in the San Francisco Bay Delta. But in recent years, California's tried the carrot approach more than just the stick approach, and that is they do have some funding for state for water projects, but if you want to be eligible for the funding, you have to do some integrated water resource management plans. That seems like something people ought to have been doing, but you'd be surprised how often that's not done. But here, if you want to get funding, if you need to do that. There's also something now looking at especially groundwater availability for subdivisions more than 500 units, where a complete basin analysis is required. Again, you might think that, well, of course that should have been done, but it hadn't been done. And now the law is trying to incorporate that. And those are good things. Here's a list of meeting the future water demands in California, and increasingly the environmental sector is one of concern as we have grown into our water supplies and have had demand exceed our water supplies. But here are some of the potential things that will occur. Decreases in consumptive use of water in the urban sector, which is growing and will continue to expand into agricultural lands. And there again comes in the improvement to irrigation efficiency and agricultural production. Again, though, this portion of the paper, and mine as well, recognize that as you have less return flow through as a result of increased efficiency, that affects recharge, that can affect streams, again, the hydrologic cycle. So this was the California case study conclusion, and I think I'll let you read it for yourselves, but I think you could substitute almost any other state in there that's experiencing growing demands and limited supplies. The question is there the will to deal with these issues in a way that is concerted, has some forethought, as opposed to ending up with a situation where we look at it in the future and say, why didn't we do things differently? And I'll come back to the issue of trade-offs a little later. Now, Arizona, of course, where I'm from, and I could spend a long time talking about Arizona, but I won't. Arizona has an interesting management structure in which we've divided the state into some regions, and areas called the active management areas are the subject of active groundwater regulation. Elsewhere in the state, there virtually is no quantification of groundwater rights nor regulation. And it's interesting for those of you, we're supposed to be talking about agriculture here. Within the active management areas and the areas on the map, that there's some little areas that are labeled irrigation non-expansion areas. There's three of them that I've just pointed to. Within the active management areas, these colored areas up through the central part of the state and up here a little bit to the north, and in the INAs, the irrigation non-expansion areas, agricultural acreage is limited to the historic footprint of agriculture from the 1975 through 79 period. Again, the AMAs were areas where overdraft was significant. The idea was to try to get into balance between withdrawals and net and natural recharge. And one of the policies or tools to that would be to make sure that agriculture did not expand its acreage beyond that which had been historically irrigated, and then also quantifying the water rights. In Arizona, where groundwater is limited, even in these active management areas, agriculture has rights in perpetuity on the acreage in which it had historically irrigated. Of course, in many parts of the state, particularly the Phoenix and Tucson areas, and also in the middle area here, agricultural acreage is being converted to homes. And about 70% of the water used or extracted, I should more carefully say extracted or diverted, is by agriculture in the state of Arizona, down from 80 to 85% not that long ago. Some data still show maybe closer to 80%, depending on what's measured. Conservation, of course, is very important. Within these active management areas, we have required conservation programs for all of the major water-using sectors, including agriculture. And it's primarily either a quantified water use per acre, or more recently, they've moved to a best management practices approach in agriculture and in the municipal sector and industrial sector. One thing to point out, and I'm going to come to more to say more of this in just a moment, is that if you look at the water use sectors within the state of Arizona, you'll see measurements for the industrial, municipal, and agricultural sector. We don't have really the means or the requirement to measure the environmental sector, but increasingly that is of more and more concern as we experience in certain parts of the country greater environmental degradation and, again, greater competition for water supplies. So in the Arizona conclusion, again, and a lot of these conclusions carry over to other areas, is that, well, our rapid population growth has slowed down a little bit with the recession and other factors. We have drought, we have climate change impacts, and we have a very challenging situation in terms of balancing the water demands of these different sectors. We also have an additional challenge in that our state is broke. We have a state that's highly dependent on growth and the home building industry in particular. And with this downturn, our economy's been hit very hard. I think we in California compete with each other as far as who's been hit the hardest in terms of percentage of state budget shortfall revenues relative to budgeted expenditures. And so our Department of Water Resources, which is charged with enforcing and implementing our Groundwater Management Act, has really suffered a very, very serious staff cutback. And that affects our ability really to do some things in the state. Now, I did want to point out, and this isn't talked about that much in the paper, but we do a lot of artificial recharge in Arizona. We in California are probably the leaders in the country. And this is to take advantage of some of the spatial and temporal disconnects that we also experience in Arizona in our water supplies. And we have a very special recharge program that works with agriculture, whereby cities and agriculture partner. The cities buy down the cost of the more expensive surface supplies to give agriculture an incentive to use Colorado River water delivered through the Central Arizona Project in lieu of groundwater and leave the groundwater, thereby save the groundwater for actually municipal use or future use. So this is an example of a pecan orchard south of Tucson that is permitted to receive Colorado River water, actually doesn't yet receive it because of the issues of extending infrastructure a very short distance from the infrastructure that delivers water to these recharge basins to the field. Again, that's one of my favorite subjects to talk about recharge, but I don't have the time to say more than that here. Now, Florida, again, agriculture is a very important water user, uses about half, uses more water than the other sectors. Half of it is groundwater, very important part of the economy. Now in Florida, the effect of withdrawals on natural ecosystems is a major consideration. I just spent some time in mid-July in Florida, and because of the requirements for e-flows or minimal flows in rivers, there are going to be significant restrictions on pumping by all the sectors in the state. And so there's serious concern there about how to meet all the demands in the future. And they're looking at the same things California's looking at, Arizona's looking at, more conservation, more reuse, somehow figuring out perhaps how to do more storage. So again, the environmental considerations, as well as the economic social considerations, are important. And you have to think of all the sectors as you think about that. And again, they have a carrot type approach. They've got support for development of alternative supplies, which is a carrot type approach. We don't really have that in Arizona. And here you see reclaimed water and low quality or brackish groundwater as seen as important new supplies. Now, the High Plains Aquifer, I will be very brief. It is under 8 states. The volume of water is reported as 9 times the volume of Lake Erie. In the state of Nebraska, they attempted to take an integrated water resource management approach, particularly in areas where it seemed like you were reaching capacity on water uses relative to supplies. And the state, through its Department of Natural Resources, took a very active role in this. This was a change several years ago, again, like we're seeing in Florida and California more recently. Now, this, I thought, was an interesting quote by our author from the High Plains region. And they noted that recharge rates are very slow. There's not a lot of population growth in much of the High Plains Aquifer region, unlike the other three regions I talked about. Yet there doesn't seem that much of a will to do very much, perhaps outside of Nebraska and a few other areas. And said no utility would be gained from leaving water in the ground. Pumping the water has and will continue to create wealth. So they're looking at a policy of just continuing to extract that, rather than, as in Arizona's case, being quite concerned about the overdraft situation and trying to do something about it. So in closing, I'd like to note that I see some challenges as we talk about the water availability part of the picture for agriculture and not taking it for granted. I actually believe that we have to take a holistic approach, that it is more important than ever that the different sectors talk to each other. And very often, the agricultural sector will consider the environmental interests kind of their, not their friends, I won't say their enemies. Actually, the president just got called for calling people enemies, but not their friends, and there's not been that much of a look at the holistic picture there, and I think there's great potential for that. Again, nobody, certainly in my state, is talking about taking agricultural water rights. We can't. They have some of the most senior and long-term water rights, but trying to talk about arrangements where all can win as a result of some mutually beneficial arrangements. We have to look at a holistic take a holistic look at the built environment, food and fiber, environment, energy, again, the competition. And I think what's different now than in the past is I think we're dealing with a situation of more uncertainty. And that makes it more challenging, but you just have to prepare for that. So I see a collaborative, a multidisciplinary approach being required. We have to look at trade-offs. That's where I think the social scientists can be helpful, is looking at the economic trade-offs, the community implications. It's not only about the physical systems. It's about the economic and social systems. And here are just some of the things that I think we need to look at. So developing a common understanding, as I said earlier, the sound water management policies can be more difficult than some scientists might expect, and a lot of it will depend upon all of us as scientists and researchers and very interested people developing, disseminating good information. So with that, there's my email and website again, and I thank you for your attention. Thank you.